I think it's safe to say that most of us grew up with some awareness of the presence of religion in the world, not just in our own family and experience. Even if our own family didn't practice religion, didn't go to church, you know, we probably noticed early on that a lot of our friends did. But beyond noticing that religion existed, we also could see that it was practiced in many different ways. Depending on where we live, we may have had friends at school who were Catholic or Jewish or traditional Christian or Baptist, whatever, all the different Protestant denominations. We may have known someone who was Hindu or Buddhist or Mormon or Sikh or Baha'i or all these different marvelous faiths all over the world. Of course, if we happen to be in one of those families who believe that our particular religion was the only right one and everyone else was wrong. Anybody ever grow up in a family like that? A few of us did. We just ignored everybody else, or we felt sorry for them because they were going to go to hell anyway, so it didn't matter. You know, whether we agreed with them or not, they weren't going where we were going, so we didn't have to talk to them much. But I'm willing to bet that most of us here today in this room probably were not like that, because somehow, some way, whether our parents were very open and tolerant and that's how they taught us, or whether we just figured it out on our own later on, we learned early on to become open-minded about life. In fact, I'll bet that most of you here in this room at some point in your life actually got interested in other faiths and maybe even tried some of them out, because we were interested that there were so many different ways for people to connect with God. Now, I say that about you guys because it has been my experience that most people who are attracted to more open teachings like this one aren't too concerned about religion. They're more concerned about spirituality. People who come to places like this are looking for a better way to support their own personal connection with something greater than themselves, and it's something that doesn't play favorites. We don't really care about how other people practice their spirituality. We're more interested in ours. That's why Dr. Eric Butterworth, who was a very well-known Unity minister in New York for many years, once wrote, "Within every person there is an intuitive sense of the transcendent, an inner knowledge that there is more to life than one is experiencing, and a yearning to unfold more of that more." That's the kind of feeling we had. So whatever point it was in our life, we all became aware of that inner yearning, and we started looking, and we ended up here, which is great. Anyway, as we began to move forward on what we call our spiritual path, we eventually come up against the uncomfortable and sometimes confusing realization that we also have an outer life that we are living that frequently doesn't look very spiritual at all. I mean, we have to go to work, we have to make a living, we have to maintain all sorts of different relationships, friendships, family, all of those things. We have to clean the house, do laundry, walk the dog, all that other stuff. We have to function in what people call the real world. So what we usually end up doing is trying to balance our spiritual life with our everyday life. We do our job 5 days a week, or six or seven, some of us, sometimes doing things we aren't crazy about, or maybe putting up with travel, long hours, and difficult people so that we can do the work that we love. But in the middle of all the other things that we're trying to do, we are also trying to grow spiritually because that's important to us. So we sign up for a class on some spiritual subject, or we give up the one morning a week that we can sleep in to be here on Sunday, and we do this because we know that being around all this positive energy and hearing something inspirational is good for us. But it's hard sometimes. It's tough when we feel like we have to choose between what we need to do and the things that we want to do. It's hard not to short ourselves on one or the other. So maybe the answer is to stop trying to balance our spiritual life with our everyday life and to learn instead how to blend the two of them into one. To blend the two of them together. And the best way to do this that I know of is through the constant and intelligent use of prayer. That's what I want to talk about today. But we're not going to talk about prayer the way that most of us were taught to think about it. We're not talking about prayer as something that we do only at church or before meals or at bedtime or when we're scared or when we're in need or when we're in pain. And we're not talking about prayer as a magic formula or as a formal petition to the Almighty to get something that we tend to want at the moment. Instead, we're going to look at prayer today as a simple and logical way to elevate our consciousness so that we can accomplish the things that we do every day from a more powerful, more centered, and more thoughtful and more loving state of mind and state of heart. We're going to talk about how to live within Emerson's definition of prayer. It's my favorite. Emerson says, it's in his essay on self-reliance, he says that prayer is the contemplation of the facts of life, the stuff going on, from the highest point of view. From the highest point of view. You see, a lot of the confusion about prayer in the world, and there is a lot of confusion, what's the best kind, why isn't it always answered, is it better standing up or kneeling or prostrate on the floor, is it better silent or out loud, all of these different questions come from the differences in how we were taught to pray. And most of those questions when we were young were answered by religious dogma or by tradition. But what we want to do here is to reach an understanding of prayer that goes beyond the narrow definitions of all the different religions. Because in New Thought teachings like this one, that's the group that we're called under, New Thought, we do not believe in a power that does things to us or even in some ways for us. Instead, we see this universal intelligence, this spirit, God, whatever we want to call it, as a perfectly logical and supportive presence that functions in, as, and through us. And it does so by the way that we consciously or unconsciously use our thoughts and our emotions, that is our mind and our heart, our intelligence and our passion for living, to shape our world, to choose how we relate to life through the use of perfectly understandable and usable metaphysical and spiritual laws. You see, when we reach a certain level of mental and spiritual understanding, it completely transforms the way that we look at this thing that we call prayer. It has to transform it because prayer is no longer us saying something to God, and it's no longer something we just do to get God to do something special for us that he or she or it, whatever, would not otherwise be inclined to do. Instead, prayer becomes something that we consciously and deliberately do for ourselves. It becomes something that we do to clear away all those things that we are thinking and feeling and believing that are confusing us, distracting us, or keeping us stuck in an old and useless way of thinking. So that means, if you think about it, that there must be some basic underlying principles that we can learn and use so we can pray more effectively. In other words, if our intention is to change ourselves in here instead of contacting some divine being out there, then there has to be a science. There has to be a principle, an intelligent process that we can all learn and use because there is something in our nature. From the moment we were born, and probably before that, that wants to expand our awareness. And we all feel that at one time or another. There's something in us that wants to think better and greater thoughts. There's something in us that wants to be happy and loving instead of feeling angry or afraid. That's why I always tell people in counseling, one of the questions I always ask is, what is your spiritual practice? Because I once heard, and I tell everybody I can, that 15 minutes of focused affirmative prayer every single morning will eventually overtake and reverse 23 hours and 45 minutes of randomly negative, confused, or fearful thinking from all the stuff we hear in the world. It was Mahatma Gandhi, fabulous spiritual man, of course, who once wrote this. He said, "Prayer is not an old woman's idle amusement. Properly understood and applied, it is the most potent instrument of action." The most potent instrument of action. That's why we need to learn something about it. Now, as I thought about what Gandhi said there, it occurred to me that even though prayer is a powerful instrument that sets things in motion in our life, it's not just something that we do. Prayer is actually a sort of awareness. It's an awareness. It's a state of consciousness that we should try to achieve and to maintain, not just while we're saying certain words or on Sunday morning or while we're in a church or a synagogue or a temple or a mosque or whatever it is, but all the time. All the time. Because the person who is best able to demonstrate healing in their life and to accomplish change in the world or to create something new and different is usually not the person who memorized the best prayer or the person who prays the loudest or the longest. The person who implements change and is living the best life is the person who is living with a constant awareness of a greater possibility. Because when that person focuses their conscious spiritual attention and awareness on a certain situation or on a condition in the world, that situation, whatever it happens to be, always begins to change for the better. We see it all the time. It could be Mother Teresa, Gandhi, Dr. King, going all the way back to Jesus, the Buddha, and before that. Now, in the Christian New Testament, I'll use it because a lot of us are familiar with it, though not everyone here grew up with that. There are two verses that apply here that I want to talk about. The first one I'm going to talk about came from Paul, not me, it's the old bald guy. Okay, the other one, all right? He said that his followers should, three words, he said, pray without ceasing. Pray without ceasing. And that's a very profound observation, but we have to understand what it means. It doesn't mean to carry a rosary or prayer beads around with us all the time, everywhere we go. It doesn't mean to read the Bible every extra minute. It doesn't even mean to go into deep meditation for hours and hours a day. Now, there's nothing wrong with those things, but that's not what it means. To pray without ceasing simply means to always use prayer, or a better, more positive, intelligent way of thinking, which is what prayer is, to always use it as a conscious and deliberate first response instead of as a token last resort. It means to focus on the spiritual solution first. You see, when we only use prayer after every other option has been exhausted, and admit it, that's what we do frequently, we aren't using it because we believe in it. We're using it because nothing else works, so what the hell, I'll give prayer a shot. That's what we do, right? That's why we do it. Now, that is not a very powerful or spiritual state of mind to be coming from, and that's why the results we get end up not being very impressive either. The reason most prayers aren't answered is not because God is some cranky old man or some cosmic parole officer that likes to say no. That's not the reason. The reason prayer is usually not answered in most people's lives is because instead of stating our intent clearly, that is, instead of planting a creative seed into an intelligent universe, which is what prayer should be, instead we find ourselves hoping that our prayer gets answered, but believing that it probably won't. In other words, we have faith not that an answer is there for us, but faith that an answer probably isn't. We have faith in the worst instead of the best. We believe in the thing we fear and the power of that thing more than we believe in the power of our desire. Now, that kind of thinking isn't bad. It's just a waste of time, because learning to pray effectively in our life means learning to take our faith or our belief and to direct it towards our good. It means using it for ourselves instead of against ourselves. Now, the other statement from the New Testament that I want to mention supposedly came from the teacher Jesus. Now, I'm not going to do it in Aramaic, which is probably the way it was said originally, but he said, we are told, whatever you desire, when you pray, believe that you have it, and you will have it. Believe that you have it, and you will have it. Now, grammatically speaking, that's a very strange statement. But from a spiritual perspective, it's perfectly correct. In fact, it explains why Jesus was such a big success. It wasn't because he had some special magical powers that nobody else had, and it really wasn't because he had a special connection to God that was different from something any of the rest of us could have. It was because he knew that praying effectively meant getting what he wanted to happen to happen. That's all effective prayer meant. It meant creating a result in the world that was a perfect match with what he had in mind from the beginning. You see, when this enlightened spiritual teacher, or any other, turned his mind to the God within, which is what prayer is, when he turned to the infinite creative power of all life with the conscious intent to create a healing, to find an answer, or to change a condition, whatever he was doing, the thing that was in his mind happened. It actually happened, and it happened quickly because his mind was clear and focused. His heart was in perfect harmony with his intent, and he expected it to happen. He wasn't praying for a miracle. He wasn't asking for a favor. He wasn't looking for a break. He knew that he was dealing with a law that supports every person who uses it the way it works. And it was that level of belief that allowed him to do things that no one had ever seen before. Now, what we're talking about here is what the New Thought community calls scientific prayer or affirmative prayer. And we're not going to spend time talking about how to do that. But if you really want to know how to pray, you need to listen to children. All right? Listen to the children. Because kids intuitively know how to pray. They know how to talk to the Spirit within. They don't know what they can't do. They don't know what's impossible until we train them to know what's impossible. They even think that God loves them. Isn't that a unique idea for some people? They're not afraid to ask questions. They're not afraid to make outrageous demands. They expect to be listened to and answered. They don't believe in limitations. So I went online and I went to this place where they had children's prayers, okay? I'll just read you a few of these to give you an idea, okay, about how clearly these children know how to talk to the power that's in them. Here's the first one. Dear God, if we come back as something, please don't let me be Jennifer Horton because I hate her. Denise, okay? Dear God, I bet it's very hard for you to love all of everybody in the world. There are only 4 people in my whole family, and I can never do it, okay? Dear God, it's okay that you made different religions, but don't you get mixed up sometimes, all right? This one was cute. Dear God, did you mean for the giraffe to look like that, or was it an accident? Okay, they're looking for information. Dear God, I didn't think orange went with purple until I saw the sunset you made last Tuesday. That was cool. And then the last one, dear God, who says bless you when you sneeze? Okay, isn't that kind of cute? You know, when we talk about prayer being of practical use in our daily life, it means having the essence of our desire clearly in mind and knowing that our perfect mental and spiritual ideal, as it exists in our consciousness, is potentially present in our life. And the only things that can get in the way are our inability to believe that it's possible, our inability to stay focused, and our inability to persevere, that is, our inability to pray without ceasing. So prayer is not just something to keep us calm. It's not just something to give us hope or to keep us from being afraid. It does all of those things, but that's not the only reason to use it. We use it because it is the active and deliberate use of our God-given power that we all have to create whatever we desire. And it can accomplish amazing things. Tennyson, the poet, once said, "More things are wrought by prayer in this world than this world dreams of," all right? So whenever we make use of this power, we have to understand that our problems that we're praying about are not cosmic problems. They don't exist in the mind of God because that power has no problems. They are external effects, and their root cause is always in here. It's in the way we choose to see them, to think about them, and to deal with them. So every problem we pray about is an opportunity for us to know something better. So the way to say it, and I've said this before, is prayer does nothing to God, but it does everything for us. It opens up a window of possibility in our experience so that our good can come through, because whatever good we are trying to create already exists in the mind of God, in the presence of Spirit, which means it already exists in the world somehow, somewhere, in some form that we don't recognize. So our good is ready to be here right now, whole, complete, and perfect, ready for us, as soon as we start believing that it's here and expressing that belief through prayer, through prayer. Now, Eric Butterworth, I'm going to finish with this. He was, the Unity minister I mentioned earlier. He said this. He said, "We do not really pray to God. Rather, we pray from a consciousness of God." Isn't that a great statement? I love the way he says that. And then he says, prayer is self-realization and self-expansion. It is getting centered within and reestablishing ourselves in the flow of the infinite creative process. What he means is, when we use this power that we have to direct our thoughts and our energy away from our problems and start focusing that energy on our good, we lift ourselves above all the problems that we're trying to heal. We enter into an infinitely more powerful and joyful and more loving space where unlimited creation is an everyday occurrence and all of our doubts and fears no longer control us. Now, the more time we spend living and being at that level of consciousness, the more we are going to want to stay there. And even though we may not be able to stay in that state of consciousness all the time, that doesn't mean that we shouldn't try. In fact, that should be our lifelong goal in terms of spirituality. Because it's not our specific prayers that are going to create heaven on earth or a wonderful life for us. It is our decision to pray. To pray to know something better, to pray wisely and well, and in harmony with the kind of life we want to create that will eventually show us that the life and the world that we're looking for is already there as soon as we put ourselves in tune for us. It's ready for us to recognize it, to embrace it, and then, the hard part, to start living it. That's what we want to do. This is the truth in your life, and this is the truth in mine. And so it is. Over here. All right. Let's take a few moments here. Take a breath or two. And this is really prayer. It is prayer because we are having a greater awareness of the presence of Spirit within us. It is prayer because it is elevated thought. It is prayer because we are giving our attention to something good and dismissing fear and resentment and anger and all those things that are swirling around in the world with people who are confused. We are no longer confused. Our mind is clear. We know what we need to think. We know how we need to think. And we have committed ourselves to thinking and believing in something better about ourselves. So as we begin to realize this, all the things in our life that are causing us problems, that are causing us stress, all of the different people, the events, the pressures that we see, we allow ourselves to rise above them and to look down upon them and see that we have a consciousness that is higher than anything that we have ever created. And as we begin to think and create from that consciousness, from that high, elevated, transformational way of thinking and being, we begin to create an experience that is far greater than anything we have ever had. We create love, we create prosperity, we create healing, we create opportunities to express ourselves, all of these things, everywhere we go and everything we do. And that is a joyful experience. So I invite you to take a few moments now in silence. And in this silence, as we share it together, simply allow yourself to feel that higher state of mind, to realize that you are an individual expression of a power that can overcome anything, and that awareness is the greatest prayer we can ever have. Take these few moments for yourself. With gratitude for this awareness and a clear understanding of its sacred significance in the world, we accept this truth as our own. We allow ourselves to be focused spiritually, to be conscious, and to be at peace. And with gratitude and a deep appreciation for all we have been given and all we have yet to give, we accept this truth as our own. We accept it, we embrace it, and we release it into consciousness, letting it do its good, perfect work for us, now and always, and so it is.